Hey, welcome again, everyone. Let's make sure I'm good to go here. Welcome, everyone, again to Mid-Current Church. If you didn't catch us at the beginning, my name is Sten, and I'm the pastor here. I've ditched my guitar, which I don't normally do here on a Sunday, but I've ditched my guitar now for a stool here. And I'm really glad that you could be with us again if you're on site here at Camp St. Croix or you're joining us online. Thrilled that you could be here with us. We are right in the middle of, as you heard a little bit here, we are right in the middle of a message series and a building campaign called Raise Them Up. We believe that we are at the point in our life as a church when it is time for us to be raising up the walls of a home to call our very own. And so we've been in a series tracking through the story of Nehemiah. And more or less, I kind of concluded that series last week. But I'm very excited because we have a little bit of a bonus week to that series today. I'm actually incredibly excited to welcome up my former lead pastor, who was the founding pastor at Cedarbrook Church in Menominee, where I came from. And I spent so many happy years at Cedarbrook Church and have so many just fond memories of that place. And the one regret I have with who it is that we are welcoming here is that I didn't find ways to express my gratitude more often. Because as I have planted Mid-Current Church, the one thing I've realized more and more and more that there isn't really anybody who has celebrated me more, has celebrated Mid-Current more, championed Mid-Current more, championed our success more than the man that is going to be joining me here today. And so I'm incredibly grateful to have him here. He has so much history and wisdom and experience in this crazy thing we call church planting and moving from place to place to place. And he's going to join us today to give us some insight, to give us some wisdom about this journey that we are on. So without further ado, will you please give a wild and raucous applause for Randy Dietrich. Okay, perfect, perfect, perfect. So as I mentioned, Remy has, you have not been at Cedarbrook for the past few years. Remy was the founding pastor at Cedarbrook, but very quickly let people know where you have been for the last year or so.
Yeah, I turned over I turned over the lead role a few years ago to the current pastor, Pastor Kyle, and I just took on the teaching role, which was kind of nice to cut back a little bit, and then I officially left a year ago, and I went to Michigan to help a church transition. They lost their senior pastor, and so I was their transitional pastor for the last year, and I just came home. We sold our house, and now we're going to go do stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, I got an email from Remy letting me know of his time finished in Michigan and that he had some free time on the calendar. I said, man, let's bring you out and let's have you share your story, your experience, your wisdom with us based on everything that we are going through. And so you've heard a little bit from the videos. You've obviously heard a little bit from me, but we're following the story of Nehemiah. And we talked in week one about how every single vision, whether it's for a marriage or for an individual or whether it's for a community or a church or whatever organization, business, that every single vision begins as a concern. So you as a church planter and just a pastor in today's world in general, what was your concern, would you say, when you started Cedarbrook Church?
Yeah, I really like that thought that vision comes out of discontent or concern, as you've been putting it. It came from Andy Stanley in a book that I read years ago, right after we had planted Cedarbrook. And it made me feel good because it made me sometimes you go like, well, who are you to go start another church? But he made me realize that, yeah, I was discontent. I did have a concern. And my concern was that people weren't experiencing God in a typical church situation. And I think I felt that so strongly because that was my situation. I grew up in, I won't name the denomination, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but a very large denomination that just wasn't relevant to me. And I went to church there as a kid, and then slowly our family fell away. And I always believed in God, but I never realized that he was personal until someone invited me to a very alive church in Minneapolis, and I came to faith, and everything changed from that point on. So I always lived with that sense like, oh, there's so many people out there that they're going to church in and out the door, and it's just a religious formality to them. They do a sense, they're doing it out of a sense of obligation. but their life's not being changed. So that was my concern, that was my discontent. And in Menominee, I just felt that there was a need for something fresh, something new and contemporary.
Yeah, and that kind of took off in many ways. In Menominee, there was a huge need for that type of church experience and that type of way to engage with faith, correct?
Yeah, we started with 200 people, so we kind of got off of the running start.
Yeah. This is a followed up on that. This isn't necessarily follow in line with some of the things that we shared we might talk about, but that concern of yours, from my perspective, has stayed true in terms of your heart for what you did with Cedarbrook Church, but your heart to stand behind people like me. We had a hand in planting in Eau Claire with our colleague Jamie Staples. So what is it about, that concern has been kind of, that heartbeat of yours has been at the center of everything, but specifically about this crazy idea for church planting. I don't want to assume that everybody gets that. What is it about that concern for one, and what is it about church planting too that keeps you going? What is it that makes you willing to sacrifice and risk and to go? What makes you willing to send and bless people that you love? Why celebrate me and say, awesome, Stan, we're standing behind you leaving our church that we love. We all love being together. So what is it about that concern? What is it about church planting that makes you make decisions like that?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that happens so easily in church, and I don't understand it. Psychologically, I don't understand it, but it's so easy for a church when it starts off fresh and it's alive. But over time, there's a cycle that churches go through if you're not careful. And there's a life cycle where it's very exciting and builds, and a building happens, and then people lose interest and it becomes all very rote and standard, and no one's interested, no one's inviting their friends anymore. And so that's my concern, I think, and that's why church planting comes in, because when you start something fresh, people pay attention. People go, oh, and the church planters are typically much more relevant to the current culture. So often, if you go to a church today that's been around for 50, 75, 100 years, you can tell it's been around for 50, 75, 100 years, because they're doing things that they did 50 years ago that is no longer relevant. And that's just so frustrating to me, because young people come in and they go, yeah, there's nothing here that's for me. No one's here that looks like me. They're not talking about my concerns. I'm just not going to do this. So that's what keeps it fresh for me. And that's why I like to invest in churches like yours and Jamie's, because you're doing what I think is so important.
How important are my skinny jeans to those types of
very
fresh
important,
elements?
Very important.
Things that you've spoken about.
I was able to plan a church without them, but
okay.
God bless you.
That says you're a whole lot better than I am, I think. So, all right, well, great. Concern at the heart of everything that we are doing. We've been following along with Nehemiah. So that's what began for him. We also, in the second week that ladies shared on the video, we took a hard look at Nehemiah's experience. As soon as he set his heart and his mind and his vision on raising these walls of the city of Jerusalem, almost immediately Nehemiah experienced a ton of opposition, distractions, discouragement, people trying to pull his dead ends, roadblocks. As soon as he acted on his vision, that was almost immediate. And we talked a lot about the fact that the reality is any vision worth pursuing for us is almost always going to include opposition worth overcoming. So what was that like for you, not only planting, but in some of the moving, which we're going to talk about from place to place as a church, but what was that like for you, either in planting or in moving, the whole experience in your pastoral career? What was the opposition?
Yeah, and
like?
So this is where the notes come in, because I was afraid I might forget some of these things. But first of all, I have to say that, opposition, come on, we're in the United States. These are first world problems that I'm going to talk about, so we're not facing death or any kind of persecution like that. So I understand that. But there were some oppositions that we faced. And one of the first things, and maybe I don't know what the culture is here in Hudson as compared to Menominee, but there is such a strong, what we call a townie culture, people that were born and raised in Menominee. And if you weren't born and raised in Menominee, we'd lived there for 30 years. It didn't matter. You're not a local if you weren't born and raised there. So there would be people, younger people, and they would want to come to our church, and they'd say, oh, Remy, we've heard so much about the church, and we'd really like to come, but, our family all goes to XYZ church, and so they kind of think Cedarbrook's a cult, so we just can't come, we're sorry. So there's that kind of opposition, just that cultural opposition from the town. The other opposition position, I think it's kind of a generic thing, but it's skepticism about church in general today. And I think that's changed. I mean, I've been a Christian for over 40 years. That's changed dramatically. When I became a Christian 40-some years ago, the church was like central to a lot of culture, and people respected churches and pastors. Pastors were always one of the top three respected professions. I don't know what they are now, but it's gotten me pretty low. So I think there's a general skepticism in the culture at large that goes, yeah, you know, church, who needs that? I mean, you know, at my church, it always splits, or at my church, the pastor ran away with the secretary. You know, everyone's got their story. Oh, they're always asking for money. So there's so much skepticism. I think that's something you fight against. And even with the building campaign, oh, my gosh. People have all kinds of bad stories about the church they were at, and they raised money, and it became all about the money, all about the building, you know, and people really get up in arms about that.
Yeah. I shared a little bit. My wife, Erica, who obviously, you know, we filmed a video a few weeks ago talking about some of it for us, and I had a chance to just talk sometimes about the collective weight of church planting. Did you, in the midst of planting and pastoring in general, from just kind of an emotional or a spiritual sense, did you ever feel that type of opposition, just kind of spiritual opposition of the weight of everything? Did you have moments where it felt like, man, this is a heavy weight to carry? And if so, how did you navigate, how did you keep moving forward when it felt like, man, what am I doing? Not that I've ever felt like that before. Right?
I've always had really good people around me, you being one of those people. But so I've been able to share, people have been able to share the load with me, which I've appreciated. But yeah, you do. I noticed I went on sabbatical once, and when I was away,
yeah, I hadn't preached the whole time. Sabbatical.
When I was away and I came back, I realized that what was so stressful about, if you're, and some of you can relate to this, even if you're not in ministry, but if whenever the buck stops with you, so if you're a business owner, if you're a pastor, you know, the lead pastor, or if you're the head of the home, I mean, wherever the buck stops with you, you're going to be the person to answer whatever the problem is at hand. There's a weight. Even when you go, you can't leave that in the office. You carry that with you all the time. So I think that's something that I realized, like, oh, Remy, you've been carrying a heavy weight. Because I didn't carry that when I was on sabbatical. It's like, that's Dan and Kyle's problem. Let them figure it out. So, but I came back, and immediately, boom, it's back. It's all my, and I remember the first time I came back, and Kyle sat me down, and he said, well, I got some bad news. I go, what's that? He goes, you have to fire someone tomorrow. We waited for you. So, yeah, the problems were sitting there on my desk when I came back. But I had one more thing about opposition. And the opposition is just a busy culture. And again, I think, like I mentioned 40 years ago, that wasn't true. But the culture today, even since we planted Cedarbrook, it's totally different. And COVID only made it worse, right? So everyone's busy. I think people now treat church as, it used to be central, like it wasn't uncommon at all for people to say, you know, out of 52 weeks in a year, I was there 50 weeks. You know, the only time I missed it was when I was on vacation. And now it's very common for people to check in once, twice, and feel, well, I'm totally committed to Midcurrent. How often do you go? I guess like once a month. Really? So that's just the way it is today, and that's not ripping on people. That's our culture. There's so many more options of what to do and where to go, and we're so much more mobile, and there's more money than there used to be. So I think that's an opposition that I feel bad for you and anyone in church ministry today that I just got out of. So, phew. But I feel bad that you have to try to create a movement when people, they've got their own things going on. Sure. And church is often just a sidelight to what used to be central. Like 50 years ago, church used to be the main thing in town.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you. I was able to benefit from the big, beautiful facility that Cedarbrook has, and it is a great facility, but you didn't start there. Cedarbrook didn't start in that big, beautiful facility from day one. So tell us about the journey, because this is where it's going to start tracking with us now. We get some insight, some wisdom from you. Tell us where Cedarbrook started, and then tell us about the journey from then, you know, where it started until now, and maybe the one thing that we need to know. Answer that, and then the one thing that we need to know about this next move that we are about to make.
Well, of course, you know, when you're new, it's such a ragtag situation. We rented a foot clinic that had extra space in Menominee, so that's where we officed. And then we were there for like a year just getting, we weren't official, we were kind of was an underground church at that time, but people were still coming. Like, we heard they were, people heard that we were going to start a church, and they wanted to be involved, and we thought, well, let's get them involved, even though we haven't officially started. So we meet with 50 to 100 people in this foot clinic, and then we started in Menominee, thankfully, built a really nice stadium-seated theater, like 2 months before we started with the church. So we moved into that, and people thought that was really cool. There's cup holders and stadium seating and stuff like that. And that was hard, though, because the children's ministry was in the side theater, so there's like 7 theaters, and we were in the main theater, but there's a lot of little theaters, so that's where the children's ministry was. And the nursery was in the hallway, and this was the bad part. People, when they'd come to get their kids, during the winter, you could touch them, and their skin was cold because it was so cold out there in the hallway. And their clothes were all covered with dirt because they're crawling around on the floor, the carpet, and the carpet was dirty, of course. So after a while, people would come and say, you know, we really like the church, but this is just not a good place for children. And so, sorry, if you ever get a place, let us know. So that was bad. And then we had an opportunity they renovated the mall in town that was just a wreck, so they renovated it. And we thought, oh, maybe this is very similar to you, because I know you had trouble. Like, where do we go? I mean, we're growing. Where do we go? It's a really catch-22. So we left the theater, and we built out a storefront basically just for children's ministry. And then they had a banquet hall in the mall. So the banquet hall was kind of like this. It was a multi-purpose thing that many people use for concerts and wedding receptions and all kinds of things, and so we used it on Sunday mornings. And again, we hit a wall with that. People would say, you know, Remy, obviously I like it. I'm always going to come here, whether in a banquet center or in a foot clinic or wherever, but it's getting really hard to invite people here. And we started to realize that we reached a wall, or we reached a peak. There was only so many what I would call pioneers in Menominee that wanted to go to a banquet center for their church,
yep.
Especially in a rural, more traditional town. It's just like, that's not really church. It's cool, but it's not a church. So we bought some land, and it took us a little while to pull the trigger to actually start to build, but then we did do a capital campaign, and we built our building, and that, as you said, it's very nice, and it was very successful. Helped us a lot.
Yeah, our coaches in church planning talk a lot about growth barriers. When you start to realize that, you know,
right.
Not that it's about attendance, but when you start to notice kind of an attendance flatline to some degree, you've got some kind of growth barrier, but you got to figure it out. Is it a staffing growth barrier? Is it a financial growth barrier? Is it a facility growth barrier?
And bad preaching.
Bad preaching. That's just wait. attendance. So it sounds like in a lot of ways you guys kept realizing, like, while it might have been a few other things, you know, from staff, whatever, it sounds like the facility was kind of a growth barrier.
Yeah, definitely.
Time and time again.
Definitely.
Yeah. So then what is that kind of second question? That was your journey. We're kind of at the beginning of it now in so many ways. This has been a great home. We put our kids downstairs on concrete floors and all that deal. So we're all of a sudden taking a step in this same journey. So what would be the one thing that you think all of us would need to know about this journey that we were on, and every move that maybe comes after? What's the one thing that you would say to us that you want us to know as we begin to take these steps forward?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the one thing. There'll probably be different things, but I'll pick one thing. And the one thing I was thinking about was just be really careful that the building doesn't become the focal point.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very easy, especially the longer you're part of MidCurrent, the more ownership you have. And it's like, well, but we've got to have blue carpet. I mean, if there's something gets fixed in our minds, our ownership gets so strong, and suddenly you realize you're fighting over blue carpet, and you're losing interest in why you even want the building in the first place.
Yeah.
So because we went from place to place to place, in each place, people got very attached. I was so surprised that people got attached in every place. No matter how bad it was, there was always people that didn't want to leave the theater. They didn't want to leave the mall. You know, some people didn't go to the building. They go, oh, no, now you're just getting too professional. You know, I liked it when it was kind of down and dirty, and you were getting by on a shoestring. But now they have a building. It's just not cool anymore. So people got very attached to each location, and I would say that's something you have to be very careful with, because it's all about reaching that new person.
Yeah.
And I see that as the biggest problem in most churches, especially established churches, is it from day one, people are very concerned about those people out there because that's, you don't have anyone in here. So you're very interested in people out there because you want to get them in. But once those new people come in and become established, then the attention slowly but surely becomes on the membership and you forget about the people out there. And I just can't tell you, I can't warn you enough that the temptation to do that is going to be there, and you might be tempted to fight over the color of the carpet or the paint on the walls, but you got to say this, you know, we're doing this. Why are we doing this? We're not doing this to make John and Mary family happy. We're doing this to reach new people with good news that will change their life because of what Jesus did on the cross.
Yeah. So that's a great transition to the next question, or at least one of them, if I jump around a little bit. Talking about the idea of a building and, you know, it not being the focus. I mean, that's obviously something that I've said here, and I try to remind people at Midkern all the time. I'll preach about it saying, the church is not a building.
Right.
The church is a people. Like, we are the church. You know, the church doesn't exist for us. We are the church. We exist for the world. So the church is not a building. That's something that I would very much agree to. Right. But then the question I'd love to get some insight from you on is, why are buildings important then? And how have you seen God use a building in your experience as a tool to build the kingdom? So again, that kind of catch 22. Totally, yeah, church is not a building, but why are they important? Why do this big deal, and how does God use that? How does God use
it? Well, part of it, in a very simple way, it's just our culture. I mean, if you go to work, you go to a building. If you go to a school, you go to a building. Everything you do is in a building. So to not have a building is just like, what? Where's your building? So in different cultures, that's not true. So you might go to Honduras or something and go, well, they don't have a building, and they do church just fine. Well, they don't have buildings for anything, you know, and the buildings they have are very poor. That's a culture that has adapted to no buildings. But in this culture, you know, good missionaries adapt to the culture. And in this culture, organizations have buildings. So that's one thing. And the other thing I thought of was just it brings credibility. Like I said, in Menominee, I quoted that person who said, Remy, I'll always be a part of Cedar Brook, but it's getting harder to invite my friends to it. And so you might love this building. It's a cool building. There's a lot to be excited about it. But I would imagine that over time, it's going to get harder and harder to invite your friends here because you may have tapped into all your pioneer friends who love this kind of sketchy situation, you know, but there's other people who go, well, that's just not church. That's just not church. So if you want to work with the culture says you need something more established for yourself.
Kind of two more questions, essentially. The first being more on the spiritual end of things from your perspective that might be an encouragement to everyone here. So the questions, in a general way, you know, you speak to it any way you want, but how and where did you see God? I mean, personally, or even kind of corporately as the church, how did you see God in the midst of planting and buildings and moving from place to place? And how would you say your own personal faith in Jesus was impacted or expanded in all of that? Where was God in the midst of this? What was God doing and teaching?
That was a really big question, so you might have to draw me out a little more. So, let me start, because you did ask me a second question before, and I'm going to tie that in.
Yeah, go.
So where did you actually asked also, how did the building help?
Yeah, how is that? Yeah, that last second, how is it using the tool?
And that'll lead into the next thing. So how did a building help? I talked about credibility, but it's just a focal point. This is a focal point for 1 hour a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you meet someone out in the community and you want to tell them about your church, it's like, well, yeah, that sounds really cool. Where is it? Well, it's at Camp St. Croix for an hour a week. But suddenly when you have something that's established and you've got something going on all the time and you have a place that you can go to and invite people to, it offers that credibility, but it just allows you to gather more people. And when you gather more people, you can make a bigger impact at whatever you choose to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you say we're going to partner with different nonprofits in the community, you're going to make a bigger impact. And when you make that impact, the community is going to hear about it, and it's just a building snowballing effect. And so that's getting to the next part then. Where did I see God work? That's where I saw God really move, because as we moved into the building, more people came, more people invited their friends. And whenever we did something, there was we had a force to do things. So we raised money. We wrote a check for $10,000 to give to Stepping Stones, mm-hmm. which is the food pantry in town. And so we wrote at Christmas. We'd always raise like $50,000 to $60,000 to give away. And so we gave it to the Stepping Stones. We gave it to the Bridge to Hope, which is the domestic abuse shelter in town. We gave it to a medical clinic in Africa. We just did a lot of. We did it
to us too.
To give it to you.
I mean, we are here in large part because of the generosity of people.
Yeah. So you start. I think a building pushes you to the next level that creates critical mass. And once you get critical mass, you can do some amazing things as an organization. But if you're always just trying to gather enough people to fill a few chairs on Sunday, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right. But I think more in terms of impact. And I like to make the biggest splash I can is for the kingdom of God.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything that you can pass or whatever, but from a personal standpoint that you feel comfortable sharing, was there anything kind of personally in your own faith in Jesus, in your own life, in your own heart, that you feel like this whole, you know, experience influenced or helped expanded your faith in yeah. Jesus at all in a personal sense?
I think just that he always came through. So, I mean, you look back, you go, I can't believe we did all we did. When I drive by and I see the campus that we have there, I just go, oh my gosh, this started with 20 people. How did this happen? But we always got the money we needed. We always got the space we needed. We always got the great staff that we needed. It's just everything always came through. If we waited long enough and expected God to do something, he always came through. And that was just, and even now, so what we just did, my wife and I did in our personal life, we sold our house, we downsized significantly, and we have no plans. I mean, we have plans to go to some different countries to minister in different churches, but we don't have a place we're going to live for the next year. And the reason I can do that is because I just have this huge confidence, we both do, that God's going to show us what to do, because he always has. He's always come through.
Yeah.
And so there's no reason for us to doubt after 20 years of faithfulness that suddenly he's going to go, oh, yeah, that ran out. Okay, you're on your own now.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have sold that house. That was a bad move.
Bad idea. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So kind of the final question here, and then I'll let you say anything you want to say to us.
Sure.
But we've spent 3 weeks kind of laying out this series and how we're going, and last week we kind of unveiled the project details, and we kind of unveiled the price tag of the whole deal, and we made an invitation to people here last week to partner with us. We talked about the power of everybody. Big visions require all of us breaking it into small parts, and so we kind of turned around to Midcurrent at large, asking anyone and everyone to partner with us in this new building project. What would you say to anyone who is got that pledge card in front of them on the counter at home, still staring at? What would you say to people considering partnering with Midcurrent in our Raise Them Up campaign?
Yeah. Well, I would say there's no better place to put your money. I really would. Lisa and I were, because we did sell our house, well, we're about to tomorrow. We'll get the money. But we want to give some of that money to you, to Midcurrent. And like the Jenny Patnode was on your video last week, and she said, I don't even go to this church, but I'm giving money to Midcurrent because I believe in what you're doing so much. And we're the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, we supported the church financially the first 3 years, and we want to do it again now because there's no better place to invest our money. So we believe in Stan and Erica, and I would say more names, but I don't know your leadership here because it's not just Stan and Erica, it's everybody. But I've vetted him when I hired him years ago, and we vetted him some more when he worked with us, and vetted him more as we've watched you the last 4 years, and there's no better place. You know, Lisa and I are always looking, we feel the same way about Jamie and Emily in Eau Claire. There's no better people than these two couples and the churches, and so we're all in on these three churches up and down 94 here. And so that's what I'd say. Hey, if we're going to contribute to this, I hope you would, because there's nothing more important. I was reminded this morning, I was reflecting on the questions that I knew he was going to ask me. And it's an old story, and if you've been in business, you probably heard the story a few times, but it's every time I hear it, I'm challenged by it. But this is years ago when Steve Jobs was creating Apple Computer, and he was looking for executives to join him. And he went to one of the executives at Pepsi Cola Company, and the guy's name was John Scully, and Steve didn't have couldn't offer him the same amount of money that he was already making, and he was like, I'm gonna have to, you know, I really don't want to move to California, and you're not going to pay me as much money as I'm making now, and I'm really kind of comfortable, Steve. I don't know. He was just really hemming and hawing, and finally Steve looks at him, and he goes, look, do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life, or do you want to change the world? And he goes, oh. Well, if you put it that way, I want to change the world. And I would say the same thing to you guys. You know, it's so easy to be a part of a church and just kind of ride with the flow and just show up and take from it what you want and throw a few bucks in the offering as it goes by. But is that what you want? I mean, to me, that's sugar water. Is that what you want your church to be, just a place to go on Sunday? Or do you want to change the world? Do you want to create that critical mass that I was talking about that we've been able to develop at Cedar Brook? Where we don't just show up on Sunday, but we can change lives in the Congo, in Honduras, and in Menominee, you know, in the abuse shelters. We're changing lives there in a dramatic way. And I'm sure you've already done that to some extent with 4 years. But I think if people can come together on this and contribute to this, you can take MidCurrent to the next level. So that would be my challenge to you, is to say, no, I am all in on this. And I would also say, you know, so what we had two capital campaigns, and they were for a building, and we had to raise $800,000 at first, and I had never done this before. I thought, oh, you know, no one wants to be in this guy's position to ask for money, okay? It's a terrible position. But one part of our campaign is we identified the people we thought could make a significant contribution, and I would go sit with them, and I would say, Sten, we need 10 people to give $25,000. We thought that you might be one of them. I mean, that's a hard thing to do. But I was shocked at people were so interested and willing. I mean, we had people give 25 and 50 and 100. One guy gave $250,000. And he said that's the best investment of his life. And so that's so humbling. So I would just challenge you, and I think the first time around when you give, you might be tempted to say, well, I'll give this much, you know, because maybe you've never been challenged like this. Maybe you've never been a part of a church and you don't know what to give. But some of you might need to go back and say, you know, is that really what God wants me to give, or is that what I felt comfortable in giving? Because typically, you're not going to feel comfortable in what God asks you to give. I remember our first campaign, my wife and I gave $15,000. We'd never given that much to anything. And then the second time around, we had a much smaller amount that we were trying to raise, and I thought, oh, that's easy. Well, we won't have to give so much to this one. And I felt really strongly that God's saying, no, I want you to give more to this one. I was like, oh, more, really? So we gave $25,000 the second time around, and that's on a pastor's salary. My wife was working part-time, but pretty much all of her salary went to that over 3 years. And so when you want to do great things, you have to do great things. And if you want to do mediocre things, then give mediocre amounts. But if you want to do great things, I would just challenge you to give as much as you can, and maybe a little more, because that's probably where God is asking you.
Awesome. Thanks. I'm going to turn things over for you to close us in prayer in a second here. But anything else outside of this that you feel like you want to share, or any final words you feel like, I got to make sure I say this before I take off?
No, I think I've said it. I'm really excited just to affirm. It's been so fun to watch Stan start this church. I felt in my bones, and when we hired him, I thought, this guy's not going to stay around long. He's too good. He's got too many skills, too gifted. And I remember after we had already pretty much hired him, he sent me a video of him preaching at a church, and he wasn't preaching much at the time, but he had one, and I could tell he liked it. And I thought, oh, he's 29, and this guy is a really good preacher. Huh. And I was like, I've got to give him opportunities to preach just so he can get some experience under his belt, because I know he's going to leave soon. But so that's what we did, and that's why you got such a good preacher here. So I'm pretty sure that you like his preaching. Is that right? Woo!
Yeah. Every now and again.
I do. You know, I've listened to the series, good series. I liked what you said last week about, you drew out a good point that everyone had a role to play. Yeah. Everyone had a role to play. I thought that was very insightful.
Yeah.
So, no, I'd just say you're doing a great work. Don't come down. Nehemiah said, don't come down. You're doing good work.
Yeah.
And when I come back, I expect to see a building there.
Yeah.
No, just tell. I'm kind of ignorant, but when is the plan to build? Hopefully, when do you hope to build?
We are hopeful that by late spring, early summer, this will be a reality for us. Some of it's waiting on building permits right now from states of Wisconsin and some of that stuff. So we are optimistic that we could begin construction when the calendar flips in 2022, and then after that, it would be a 3-4 month process or so.
Excellent.
So don't hold me to it. Don't quote me on that.
All right.
But hey, thank you so much for being here with us. You're, like I said at the beginning, you're celebrating me and championing this church has made all the difference. So thank you for everything you've done for Cedarbrook and for your personal support of us, helping us be here today. We are so grateful.
It's our joy. Really is.
So yeah, we're gonna have the band come back up. There has been kind of a song we've been singing throughout this series, and so they're gonna come up. And as they do, and as we kind of reshuffle the stage here, I'm gonna have Remy close the morning with a word of prayer for us. So go bow your heads.
All right, let's pray. God, thank you so much for calling Stan and Erica to come and start this church with very few people. And you've just brought great people to him, great supporters, great musicians. I just love the passion here. I love the sense of purpose. I love how they want to reach those people who have yet to hear the good news of Jesus Christ. So we invite you to come and move in our heart in a special way. I pray, Father, that you would show people what and how you want them to be a part of this Raise Them Up campaign. God, help us deal with the skepticism that's so natural in situations like this. A lot of us have been in church situations where it was awkward, it was uncomfortable, it was forced, it was contrived. Spare Midcurrent from that kind of fundraising, but might this be a fundraising of joy and purpose and celebration? So when they all come together with the new building, they blow it out, and they see you do great things. God, you are a God who does great things. I thank you for that, and I speak a blessing over this church now in Jesus' name. Amen.